Morning. I'd like to start by acknowledging my co-authors from the California Department of Public Health, STD Control Branch, Office of Family Planning, and our partners from Kaiser Permanente Northern California. So what are some of the challenges related to capturing PID outcomes on a population level? For those states with passive PID case reporting, and there are not many, these systems, first of all, may lack sensitivity and specificity, may not be comparable across jurisdictions, may not be representative of women at risk, and may be biased toward hospitalized PID cases and thus underestimate outpatient pelvic inflammatory disease cases, which are the majority of PID cases. So, an alternative data source, administrative data source, that we can consider are administrative data sets associated with large health programs serving women. So these data sets may be more representative and may be more consistent in case ascertainment and management. So for this analysis, our study objective was to estimate outpatient PID cases based on administrative databases from the following two types of healthcare populations: managed care and public and private sector family planning settings serving low-income women clients. Our study design approach was cross-sectional. For our two administrative data sets, we used the following: Kaiser Outpatient Clinical Encounter, or OSCER, data and enrollment data for their 53 medical centers and facilities in Northern California. Second was FamilyPak paid claims and enrollment data for the largest family planning program in California, serving over 1.5 million low-income women. For inclusion criteria for Kaiser, clinical diagnosis code of PID on this OSCER clinical encounter form, and for FamilyPak, based on claims with diagnoses fields with these PID ICD-9 codes listed here, plus treatment claims for the three-drug regimen that was recommended in the 2006 CDC treatment guidelines within 30 days of the PID diagnosis date. The time frame was a diagnosis date or a claim date with this information from January 1, 2003 to December 31, 2007. We'll start with the family planning data. The slide shows the number of PID cases in the bars that we identified using the FamilyPak claims data by year during this time period. Looking at the left axis for the scale for the number of PID cases, we started with just over 2,000 cases in 2003, which then decreased to about 1,600 in 2005, but then increased to initial levels again in 2006 and 2007. Now looking at the right axis, which shows the PID rate per 1,000 female clients in FamilyPak and the corresponding line for this rate, the trend shows that the rate per 1,000 female clients followed a similar pattern to the numbers of cases, which is important to look at because we want to know if the number of clients is also changing and therefore impacting the number of PID diagnoses identified during this time period. This slide now shows the overall number of PID cases in Kaiser Permanente Northern California by year. So we started with about 792 cases in 2003, which then increased slightly to over 928 cases in 2006, followed by a very slight decline to 850 cases in 2007. We're now in the process of receiving the female enrollment denominators that would then enable us to calculate the PID rate among enrollees for comparison across these programs. And as Gail showed you earlier, we actually have PID case reports for the entire state of California during the same period. So for comparison with the previous two program slides, this slide shows the total number of PID cases reported to the California State STD Surveillance System from all providers, and it's shown here in the green bars, same scale as was used for the previous two slides. So we start with 1,500. In 2003, and you see a slight trend downward from there to about 1,200 cases in 2007. Now, if we add back the numbers of PID cases identified from just the FamilyPak program and Kaiser Permanente Northern California data sources, same color bar, for comparison with the total number of case reports, state case reports in green, we see that the total cases from just those two program sources that we presented initially potentially exceeds the total number of case reports for the state overall. again suggesting significant underreporting of outpatient PID cases in our surveillance system. And note that we have not even included the potential PID burden from Kaiser Permanente's Southern California, which then add even more significant numbers of PID cases to the overall numbers of cases being identified in Kaiser 4 for North and Southern California. This slide now shows age and race-specific numbers of PID cases in the first column and PID rates in just the Family PAC program, which incorporates the client denominators for these subgroups in the second column. The numbers of PID cases were higher among females over the age of 25, and the rate was also slightly higher at 1.4 per 1,000 older females compared with 1.1 for the younger females. When we now look at the PID cases and case rates by race ethnicity in the following rows, we see that although Hispanic females actually account for most of the PID cases in the Family PAC program, when we then calculate the rates for this and other groups for comparison, actually Black female family planning clients have the highest rates in family planning at 2.1 PID cases per 1,000 Black female family planning clients, higher than the other race ethnic groups. So here's the summary of findings. First, the numbers of PID cases were relatively stable over this recent five-year period in both family planning and Kaiser Permanente Northern California. And then second, total cases from just those two programs potentially exceeded by a wide margin the known number of statewide PID case reports. Older women, slightly higher PID rates were also identified among older women in family planning. And then the racial disparities in PID among Family PAC African-American clients are consistent with disparities in chlamydia and gonorrhea rates that we've observed in both the case-based and prevalence monitoring data at both state and national levels, as we've seen time and time again. So what are the limitations to the results that we present? Well, there's lots. But a critical one, as Gail alluded to, is that the sensitivity and specificity of the PID case definition that we used in just these two data sets is as yet unknown. The sensitivity and specificity will be impacted by the following. First, inconsistent clinical diagnostic criteria for PID across providers. Secondly, inconsistent use of billing codes on claims since they may be used in justifying tests and procedures prior to a final confirmed diagnosis. Third, we have not yet validated ICD-9 and treatment codes in the Family PAC claims data, as well as Kaiser diagnostic clinical encounter codes against medical records for clients. And this is an important next step in continuing to refine our methodology for PID case finding. So recommendations based on these findings and limitations are as follows. Well, I think we should still continue to use administrative databases to estimate outpatient chlamydial and gonococcal PID within these diverse settings, but we should continue to be very careful when interpreting estimates depending on the case definition that we used. And second, consequently, an important next step is to determine sensitivity and specificity of PID case definitions by validating results against a sample of medical records. If you don't already know or have plans, for tomorrow, Delia Scholes is presenting some really interesting work in tomorrow's morning session with her group health cooperative data looking exactly at this issue of validation. We too in California have also drafted a protocol to look at a sample of charts associated with the PID cases that we've identified in the Family PAC data to assess the same issue of validation, to identify confirmed and suspect and rule out PID cases. So thanks again to our healthcare partners who have given us very generous access to their program data for this analysis, and I'm happy to take questions. Thank you. Holly?
Thanks, Jordan. That was great. As you said, we're about to roll out this chart abstraction to try to validate this as a surveillance option, and also to look at, we've seen anecdotally, some not only differential diagnostic activities by clinicians in the state, but also differential management of patients with PID, and we are concerned about improper treatment for PID. And so I was just going to ask you about your decision to restrict your cohort to those with a very specific kind of strict conservative treatment criteria that follows the CDC recommendations exactly, and how you think, why you decided to do that, and how you think that might have affected your results.
Holly Howard's question relates to our decision to actually apply a fairly strict PID case definition for our claims data analysis that restricts to those who not only have the ICD-9 code plus the treatment definition. We decided to go with a conservative definition to identify PID to match the case definition that's being used in the surveillance. But as part of this future validation using medical records, we actually have constructed cohorts of women who actually don't have that strict definition. We've actually created cohorts of those women who just have ICD-9 codes, for that have been used in Madeline Sutton's and other analyses by Michelle Bohm. We want to be able to sort this out by looking at selective criteria for PID diagnosis. So you're anticipating the work that we're doing. Thanks. Any other questions? Dr.
Yes,
Douglas.
Just to clarify, those cases you were describing had CT and GC confirmed?
No, actually, we did not incorporate, at least in that analysis, their chlamydia and gonorrhea test.
PID, but that's not how you actually did it.
No, this was purely based on the clinical encounter data. If you'd come yesterday to the other talk, where I presented Kaiser data with a PID and chlamydia and gonorrhea test results, we actually saw a very high level of chlamydia positivity and gonorrhea positivity among PID cases, particularly among young PID cases. But in contrast, for the older PID cases, we saw lower chlamydia and gonorrhea positivity, which again sort of suggests that there might be some other microbial etiology that's responsible for PID in older women. And I think this is another great opportunity perhaps to collaborate with academic centers that might be able to identify these other types of etiologies, such as what's been going on with the PEACH study in Pittsburgh and other research centers.
And my other question, it looked like you had a little more variation in your Kaiser number of diagnoses per year than in Family Pack. I may have been imagining that, but there was sort of a dip, I thought.
Yeah, it's not really clear. I think that's going to be another validation issue. Again, the OSCAR encounter, the clinical diagnosis forms actually vary across departments within Kaiser. And so if you're coming into the emergency room, you get a different set of clinical encounter diagnoses to choose from compared to if you were to come into an OBGYN clinic. And so I'm sure that there's variations in provided utilization of those codes that I alluded to. So it wasn't a mirage. Any other questions?
Did you limit that to just primary diagnosis codes? Because often there's several levels of diagnosis. I don't know if you have that level of detail.
Yeah, this is the way we identified the ICD-9 codes on the claims is that we have specific this is a field which actually, there's only one diagnosis field in addition to the type of contraceptive method that someone receives. So on any one claim related to PID, we'll be able to capture PID, a PID ICD-9 code. So there's not, we get line-listed claim lines that, you know, really enlarge our capture. Gail. Hi.
Have you thought about maybe getting any type of qualitative data about what providers or ED docs, what their knowledge is about and practices are about diagnosing PID and see if any standard protocols in the emergency department, just to see, get a sense of maybe what the validity of the diagnoses are? We actually did chart reviews in a couple of our EDs looking at of all the females diagnosed with gonorrhea chlamydia over 6 month time in those EDs, and
we found that a lot of there are medical records where cervical motion tenderness was documented, and the female did not get the appropriate diagnosis and did not get the appropriate treatment. And then I went back to the EDs and presented my data. One of the EDs said, "Well, wait a second. How do you diagnose CID again?" Yeah. And then, "Well, how do you know if cataracts won't work?"
So Gail Burstein's question is a very good one, and if you haven't seen her data on her poster downstairs, she is alluding to this very interesting analysis based on emergency room diagnoses practice, I guess, for PID in Buffalo in two emergency rooms, and how there's definitely a big disconnect, I think, between presenting signs and symptoms for PID and actual appropriate management of PID amongst physicians. And what a great lead-in, I think, to our next speaker, because we actually are trying to assess amongst providers using a survey the degree to which they are confused about the definition of PID, clinical surveillance and reporting requirements, and how that may factor into some of the underestimates of PID that that we're getting. So, great question. Thank you. Any other questions?